Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass in the engineering area that we have set aside. Tom, now this is a bad week. Let me tell you about a little town called Layton, British Columbia. They recorded 121 degrees, the hottest temperature ever recorded in the country of Canada. And then guess what happened the next day after that?
I know what happened, but you tell everybody.
Fire raced through the little town, and I've seen the pictures of Main Street. It's just rubble. 450 people live in this little town of Layton, British Columbia. Now their town is gone. That qualifies as a really bad week. Well, I hope your week is a lot better than that. What's going on up in Layton, BC? It's Buckmaster on this Friday, July 2nd, as we get ready to kick off Independence Day weekend 2021. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. It's KVOI. Our radio show is now 10 and a half years into the radio project on KVOI. Of course, we have our live streaming on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, a big shout out to them, Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you, Dylan. The Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, that's Dan Shear and his group. Thanks. Jim Ninsel of the Tucson Local Media Group, they support us with their publications, Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. And before we go to introduce our featured guest today, I do want to bring in on the live line our guest reporter today, Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, opinion page editor and columnist. Sarah, how are you and your lovely dog, Olivia?
We are both doing well. And Olivia is sneezing, so hopefully she will not interrupt.
Yeah, she has in the past, to be perfectly transparent, as Buckmaster Show listeners know. But you have kind of figured this out by, you do give her a little snack right before noon, don't you, when you go on the show?
I do. Because if I put her in a different room, she's just going to sing at me until I let her in.
There you go.
Food is the way.
There you go. All right. Leah Marquez Peterson is with me in studio. Leah, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me on, Bill. And hello to Sarah.
Yep.
Hello.
Want to do the full introduction? You certainly deserve it. You are chair of the Arizona Corporation Commission, which was established by the Arizona Constitution to ensure safe, reliable, and affordable utility services and have railroad and pipeline systems that are operated and maintained in a safe manner, along with protecting citizens by enforcing an ethical securities marketplace. We didn't mention water in that introduction.
There is a lot, electricity, water, gas, wastewater, incorporating businesses, a lot that we tackle at the Corporation Commission.
Leah Marquez Peterson was elected to the ACC in November of 2020. She was sworn in January 4th of this year, elected by her fellow commissioners as chair. Prior to November of 2020, she was appointed to the commission by Governor Ducey in May of 2019. That was a vacancy that became available. Who left?
Andy Tobin. To the ADOA.
Okay, he left. With her appointment, she became the first Latina to serve in a statewide office in Arizona. She's the only commissioner who is not from the Phoenix area, from Maricopa County. That's something of note for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's begin, Leah. I'm concerned, and I think all of our listeners are, we're worried that, you know, if things get so hot, we just had this incredible heat dome over the Pacific Northwest. Temperatures unheard of. Portland, well over 110. Seattle, all-time records. I think a lot of us are worried, what happens if California gets into some kind of a big heat emergency? There was some news recently about that they could block Arizona's power. What's that about?
You know, it's very concerning, Bill. I mean, not to bring alarm to your listeners, but we have been tracking this very closely. If you recall last summer, California had rolling blackouts.
Yes.
And at the time, I hosted an emergency meeting with all of our CEOs from the various electric utilities and asked, tell me about your preparedness. I want reassurances that Arizonans will be covered, will have the energy they need to cool their homes. Because as you know, in Arizona, that's life and death in many cases as the heat really rises incredibly in the summer. And we did have those assurances. They actually had excess energy that they sold to California last summer. And we also had confirmation that any excess dollars that they generated would come back to ratepayers. As we move forward in summer preparedness, we held a number of workshops. We actually hosted an energy reliability summit to talk about it again and again and just continue to have assurances. But California has been playing some pretty crazy moves just recently, and not to get too wonky, but to explain, their transmission organization, CAISO it's called, has filed with FERC, which is the Federal Energy Reliability Commission.
You have a lot of acronyms.
We have so many. I have a book.
Go ahead. All
but
right.
FERC, the federal entity, to say that as energy is transmitted from the Pacific Northwest, down through California to Arizona, Nevada, and other Southwest states, that CAISO could actually take our energy that we had pre-purchased or the utilities had and utilize it in case that they had run into shortages. To me, this is poor planning on California's part. It really puts Arizona at risk. I filed a number of letters to my fellow commissioners and utility companies. We've also filed objections at the federal level. All of our utilities in Arizona, Nevada's weighed in, New Mexico's weighed in, just saying how unfair this is. California is a big player, obviously a major energy user, and it does concern us greatly. When we've gone back to the utilities and said, what will occur if we were to lose this federal battle, which it's not looking real good right now, honestly, they said, we feel pretty, we're prepared for this summer, but future summers, this could be an issue. So we are still at the heart of this. I filed a press release just recently expressing concern, just really looking to get more folks engaged in this discussion. There's not a lot that we can do other than file objections and legally go after this with California and with the FERC or the federal entity. But it is very concerning that California is reacting in this matter. They've have a great dependency on renewable energy. I'm a big supporter of renewable energy, but they've eliminated a lot of the energy that they could use to sustain them during peak periods, the hottest time of day, let's say 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. So it's a matter of really, my priority as an Arizona Corporation Commissioner are the families of Arizona. And so we're really at battle right now with California.
That's a huge story. I mean, if they wanted to say, well, we need the our needs are here, and what do we do if we need that power? We're really going to be stuck.
So we have multiple channels of energy coming into Arizona.
Okay.
The utilities, APS, Tucson Electric Power, others have all done their analysis and are prepared and assuring us as commissioners that we're prepared for this summer. They've done projections on the heat. You know, we work with the National Weather Service and others. But it's always concerning when you lose one of those, you know, entities that they had pre-planned and pre-purchased energy through.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I don't think any of our listeners want to be stuck without any AC. That would be bad. I mean, it's bad enough if you have the AC fail due to a mechanical issue in your home, trying to get somebody out right away. Anyway, Sarah, jump in.
Along those lines, the Washington Post has a story on its website today about the folks in its base in Tucson, but what the heat has done to people who live in older homes, specifically mobile homes, and how precarious their situations are, because mobile homes, you know, don't always have the best insulation or efficient air conditioners, evaporative coolers don't work once the rains come. Is there anything that the ACC is doing or could do to help people in those situations purchase, you know, more efficient air cooling technology, or help with their bills so they can have their coolers on more than just a few hours a day, like the guy featured in the piece?
Yeah, and I didn't see that piece, but we're absolutely taking action on all of those points. And what came to mind as you were describing it was certainly our low-income programs that our utilities are supporting. The first place anyone should go if they are experiencing challenges is certainly go to the utility, learn about utility assistance programs and low-income programs. They're also, we have put in place a disconnection moratorium. That happened last summer because we heard of heat-related illness and we had the horrible death of a woman up in the Phoenix area. And put a moratorium in place that is January 1st through October 15th. That means that you cannot be disconnected during that time, but you certainly should be working with your utility on a payment plan and finding out about these assistance programs. We've then tackled that even further. I looked just recently at a permanent disconnection moratorium, and we've had a lot of debate and discussion. It's still ongoing. We're having public comment sessions now, but that's around a 95-degree temperature or January or June 1st through October 15th, utilities are working on. So we are certainly concerned about folks that run into financial difficulties. The pandemic has even exacerbated that. So we want to make sure that people realize that there are certain utility assistance programs and that they should work very closely with their utility company.
So if you're having trouble with paying the bill, contact Tucson Electric Power, if that is your provider.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sarah, I want to switch subjects. Speaking of Tucson Electric Power, and this came up yesterday in our interview with Steve Kasachek, the Tucson City Councilman, and when I mentioned that Leah was going to be with us, he said, please ask Leah about this plan from Tucson Electric Power to put these giant, I call them the Sequoia, the giant Sequoia poles, these huge electric poles down Campbell Avenue. This is the first I had heard of this. What's going on, Leah, with this?
Yeah, so Tucson Electric Power has been working on this for some time and having public comment sessions. So I think it's important to tell listeners on your show that, you know, if they want to weigh in, they can go to TEP.com, send an email. There's an address they can write a letter, mm-hmm. or they can attend a public comment session. I think they're virtual at this point, mm-hmm. but and give feedback. What TEP has done is put some routes forward, a number of them, and they're narrowing them. You can see the maps on their website.
Okay.
In some cases, they're going down their existing transmission line path, mm-hmm. and others, mm-hmm. they're creating new routes. So certainly I've heard from a number of neighbors about this. We've received letters. How it works at the commission is we have formed a line siting committee. We just actually appointed Rick Grinnell, who's from Southern Arizona,
sure.
to that committee.
Okay.
But it's made up of folks throughout the state that represent the cities and the counties and different geographic areas. And that committee is reviewing the routes. They'll ultimately come up with a recommendation that they'll send to our corporation commissioners, and we will vote. So I don't know when that is going to come before us. I would assume, you know, sometime this fall or maybe early spring of 2022. But you can see all the information and the maps at TEP.com.
Well, I mean, it's just the when I think about these giant poles down Campbell Avenue, why is this necessary? Is there some connection to the University of Arizona getting these poles over to the UA?
Some of that. I mean, the U of A made a commitment over a year ago to clean energy, and it was very celebrated at the time. I was happy to support the effort that they're going to really convert to clean energy through all their different energy sources. Also, Central Tucson will be served by this transmission, and you can see exactly who's served on the maps on the website. But all of that is coming into play and has created a necessity for greater energy on these transmission poles.
Why can't they be put underground? I guess they could be put underground. It's just the cost, right?
It is. It is. And that's one of the first questions I asked, because, you know, certainly down Campbell Avenue, but it's who is going to be the bearer of those? Is it the city council? Is City of Tucson going to be responsible? Does Pima County have a role in that? Is it TEP and the ratepayers ultimately that will cover that? And it's very, very pricey. I've heard up as much as 10 times the cost of putting a pole up is the cost to go underground. So that's certainly, though, something that your listeners can weigh in on by writing a letter or an email or going to one of the public comment sessions.
Sarah, do you have any follow-up on this before we take the break?
Well, I was just wondering when people do make comments to the ACC or any other elected entity, how much weight do those comments have? Do they make a difference in decisions?
That's a good question. As you may know, this is my first elected seat. I formerly ran the Hispanic Chamber and was myself writing letters to the elected officials. So they do make a difference. I think those letters that are customized, that people are telling stories, telling us how it impacts their lives, are much more impactful than when I get, you know, 100 generic emails that are all the same. Then I'm just counting how many are opposition or support. But I'm paying very close attention to these, as I think my fellow commissioners are. And I think a lot of elected officials do. We need to hear from the public. As I got into this position, I hear a lot from lobbyists, as you can imagine, a lot from environmental stakeholders. Don't hear from individuals as much, or small business advocates, which I myself was in the past. So I'm always encouraging people to weigh in and send us an email or write us a letter.
Yeah, and if you're a small business owner along that corridor, I'm sure you'll want to weigh in on what could be coming your way. Let's pause right here. It's the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview is with Leah Marquez-Peterson. She is the chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star is also involved in our conversation. She is on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Be right back in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Friday Focus interview today, Leah Marquez-Peterson is with us. She is the chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. Some people say if it's a chairwoman, they say chair. I think chairwoman's appropriate,
yeah.
Don't you, Leah?
Yeah, that's what I'm called at the office.
But some people just say chair. Well, you're not just a chair. You're a human being. Anyway, Sarah Garrett Gasson is with us on the live line. Sarah, how are you doing?
I am okay.
Good.
Olivia the dog was having a dream and barking in her sleep. But that was during the commercial break.
Wow. That could have been something chasing Olivia, but I doubt it would be your tortoise.
No, probably a very slow speed chase.
The tortoise probably dreams about being chased by the dog. So that's
true.
I don't know how tortoises if they have nightmares or how they dream. But I know my little kitty cat. I'll see her kind of twitching. So she's probably very worried about dogs chasing her. So that's how it works, I guess. I don't know how it works. Anyway, Sarah, why don't you begin? You're up to the plate with a question for Leah, then I'll be back.
Okay, Chairwoman. I would like to ask about what's been going on with the goals versus rules.
Yeah.
With sustainable clean energy requirements, and where do we stand now?
Well, good question. So I will kind of back up and tell you, for the last 4 years, the Corporation Commission has been working on energy rules. And these are rules that would be set in place that would direct the utilities how much, what direction, when to invest, and so on in clean energy. As you may know, I've been on the commission a little over two years now, if you count my time being appointed by the governor initially and then later being elected. And it's been quite a debate. I myself led the effort to focus on 100% clean energy by 2050. I also led and authored the piece that talked about the fact that it would be technology agnostic. What that means is, when I was first appointed and I started meeting with various groups and utilities and entities, I realized early on how much technology and innovation is coming forth in this sector and these industries. And we don't know what's going to be there in 10, 20, 30 years. So I wanted to be sure that we weren't calling the winners and the losers. We were really, in terms of industry or how do we get there, but really leaving it open to any technology that would lead us to 100% clean energy by 2050. We took our first vote in fall of 2020, and that was a different commission. We had two other commissioners on. And at the time, we put in place an all-source RFP. We put together a new resource planning process. So felt very passionate about the direction we'd gone and thought we had really worked collaboratively together. And I voted in support of that package, knowing that we were going to have an economic impact statement as our next step and understand what's the impact to families. We all see that goal and we've put that in place, but what's the financial impact to each Arizonan who's a ratepayer who's going to be paying to achieve this? Fast forward, I became the chairwoman during my campaign to be chair, which my fellow commissioners voted me in as. I pledged to bring the energy rules back onto the agenda and to ensure that we continued this process. So we brought it back in front of the commission in the beginning of May, and you saw a lot of amendments come forth. My particular focus was exactly what I had said since the beginning of my own debate on energy rules, is absolutely support clean energy from an economic development perspective. It's the direction the nation's going. You've certainly seen a lot of federal activity on this recently. But ultimately, we need to know it's affordable. This cannot just be a political ideology that we're all supporting. It has to be affordable for our families in Arizona. And at the same time, we're coming out of this pandemic, when I've heard from thousands of families about the financial challenges they're facing. So that's the theme and the content and the letters that I wrote related to energy rules at the beginning of May. We changed the energy rules from a mandate to a goal, because we lacked any data or cost-benefit analysis to actually tell us what that impact would be. And I could not in good conscience support mandating something on the utility industry at that point without knowing what the cost would be. That just was not reasonable to me. And it felt like a blank check being given to the utilities to just accomplish this this incredible mandate without knowing, you know, what it would cost. So you saw it change at that point, early May, from mandates to goals, and myself and Commissioner O'Connor supported it, but the other three did not, so it failed. We had a lot of letters and information going back and forth, lots of media, lots of people weighing in. At the end of May, I thought, based on the letters, information I'd seen, that we had some kind of consensus. I thought we might be able to move forward. So I put it back on the agenda at the end of May. And after a lot of debate and a lot more amendments, you saw it move back to a mandate, and you saw the date move out, not from 2050, which is what the nation's really talking about, but to 2070. Hmm. And that did not seem reasonable to me. We would be 20 years later than the rest of the states and the nation. And still, on top of all of this, we did not have the cost-benefit analysis. So we were unable to determine what the financial impact to each of the families and the ratepayers would be. It was my hope that we would stay as goals, and unfortunately it didn't, and three commissioners, because that's all it takes is three, voted in support of this new package, and it passed. And I voted no, as did Commissioner Olson. That's where we sit now. What that means is we're going to go into supplemental rulemaking. We're getting our cost-benefit analysis that I've been demanding for, gosh, maybe it's 8 or 9 months now since that first vote, and that comes out this month. So we'll get that information, and instead of guesstimates and assumptions, we'll actually have data and information as to the financial impact to ratepayers, and we can go from there. So I expect we'll see energy rules again this fall, and I'm sure there are going to be a number of amendments again. But it's something I fully support, clean energy, but this has to be done the right way, and it can't just be on the backs of the ratepayers.
So the go ahead, Sarah.
You mentioned the cost-benefit analysis. There's a study that just came out from the Southern Energy Efficiency Project saying that Arizona could save $2 billion and grow the state economy. But so I'm wondering, the cost-benefit analysis, who is conducting that and why is it taking so long?
Yeah, and that's key. So we, as you can imagine, in any elected position, we had a lot of lobbyists present us reports and data. And it all, in my opinion, had their particular bias to it, just to be blunt. I wanted an independent consultant hired by the commission that would do our own cost-benefit analysis. I hope the consultant, when he comes out with his analysis later this month, shows incredible savings. And I will completely embrace clean energy as mandates and on we move. But if it doesn't and it shows the opposite or a huge impact to ratepayers, I want to ensure that I'm watching out for families across the state. This took the timing question you had. I've asked the same question. When we voted in November of 2020, Sarah, I was promised an economic impact statement is what they called it. When I received that, to me, it really had no data to it. It was hyperlinks to different environmental stakeholder groups, studies. It didn't have the analysis I was looking for. So I wrote letters, gave speeches on this to our own staff, and really demanded financial impact to the ratepayer. That's what I'm looking for. I want to know if you're a TEP customer, APS customer, otherwise, how much will your bill go up or down, let's say, because we're going to commit to clean energy over the next however many years this ends up being debated and negotiated. And that data was missing. So it took this long to get the consultant in place, the RFP put out, the consultant to respond, and then he's in the middle of his analysis now. And it's been a bit of a fight to make ensure that we're getting this cost-benefit analysis as needed. So that's kind of the story behind why don't we have the data. And I think this kind of data is necessary for every issue we talk about. I mean, I mentioned earlier with Bill, we regulate water and gas and wastewater. And when we're dealing with a rate case at the commission, we're drilling it down to what's the impact on the bill to the ratepayer. Yet we weren't doing this for one of the most important rules we were negotiating, our energy rules. So I thought it was necessary.
I think it would be helpful to... excuse me, Sarah, I was just wondering if you could clarify the utilities currently, how much, what percentage has to be clean energy right now? Because we're talking eventually in the future of 100% clean. Where are we right now?
So right now, the only standard or mandate in place is a renewable energy standard that was set back in 2006.
Okay.
And it's requiring 15% renewable 15. Energy.
Okay.
Right now, the utilities vary, you know, based on mm-hmm. but they're... around, I think if you combine them all, around 11, 12% on average. And so, but they have put their own incredible goals forward. You heard when Mr. Goldner became the CEO of APS, which is the Phoenix electricity company, announced 100% clean energy by 2050. Tucson Electric Power has made goals or commitments of 70% renewable energy by 2045, I think off the top of my head. And so they've made their own goals in place.
Okay.
And so those own sets of IRPs are called, or plans in order to get there, are part of the projects that we are having the consultant review. If we go in these particular routes to reach clean energy, what's the cost to the ratepayer? And we're just missing that very important information, I think, in order to support something that we then mandate. As regulators, when we mandate this, they will then move that direction. They'll make capital investments, spend millions of dollars to achieve that. And that's all going to be on the backs of the ratepayers.
All right, Sarah, you had another follow-up, and I kind of cut you off, so go ahead.
That is quite all right. Show, after all.
Go ahead.
So two questions out of that. When you're talking about the cost to the ratepayers, you mentioned, you know, it's technology agnostic. So how specific can any report or estimation be, especially throughout the life of, you know, through 2050 or 2070? And then isn't the ACC's one of the obligations, or, you know, things that the ACC does, is keep a very close eye on rate increases, rate charges and changes going forward? So I guess my question is, how can you predict the future, and isn't the ACC's job to keep tabs on that going forward?
Yeah, good question. So what each utility does, and it's very transparent and public-facing, so you can read them on their websites, is produce an integrated resource plan, IRP. And they are then projecting 10 to 15 years out, and they do this every couple of years so that we know that, almost like guardrails in place, they're going the direction that we're asking them to. Recognizing the capital investments they've made in order to achieve, at this point, the only mandate being renewable energy, but certainly that expansion, and that would be the utilization of these IRPs to reach these clean energy goals. So we would be looking at it every few years, and that's one of the reasons I felt comfortable changing it to a goal rather than a mandate, because we could make modifications as needed as we move forward. This consultant is going to be looking at the IRPs, integrated resource plans, put out by APS, TEP, and so on, so that he can see 10 to 15 years out exactly how they plan to achieve and continue down that path towards clean energy. That's data that they can actually use to determine the financial impact to the ratepayer. You're right. Guessing right now what's the impact to bill at TEP in 2050, pretty hard to do. But we can do 10, 15 years out based on projections and capital investments that are estimated by each of the utility companies now. But we don't have that data. So that, to me, is irresponsible, and that's why I wouldn't support a mandate.
Before we wrap up this, you're getting a lot of questions from folks here in Tucson about the city of Tucson's plans to hike water rates to unincorporated residents. Like, I live in Pima County Supervisorial District Number 1 in the foothills, and our rates are going to, if this goes through, our rates, Tucson water rates, are going to go up substantially. This is not an area that you guys regulate.
No, I receive so many phone calls, and it's I live here in Tucson, of course, but drive to Phoenix for work. And we regulate private and investor-owned utilities, so not Tucson Water, not Pima County Wastewater or Mesa Water.
Who regulates those?
The mayor and council. So, I mean, Mr. Kozacik, you said, was here yesterday, and I think he voted in support of this differential water rates, which, you know, it's all... it's something that they need to speak directly to mayor and council about, as people would reach out to me and ask about private wells, forming their own water companies, succeeding from, you know, Tucson Water. I got all kinds of calls. I would tell them, talk to mayor and council, write your letters, weigh in, speak at the public comment sessions. And, you know, but obviously that did move forward, and that is concerning. I also live in unincorporated Pima County, and we're likely to see a 40% increase.
So if somebody's going to drill a well and they start selling that water to other people, then you would get involved.
Then they're a regulated water regulated utility. And what's interesting is we regulate 300 water companies in the state.
What?
People don't realize there are that many, but about 200 of those are small mom-and-pop water companies. A lot of folks where they may had development, maybe grandpa started the water company and it's passed down the generations. Yeah. We have a lot of small water companies in our state.
Can anyone drill a well on their property?
I don't know.
Do you know that?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't want to give advice. All
right. I was curious about that. All right, Sarah, anything more before we let Leah go?
No, I think that we've covered a lot of territory. Thank you for your history on all these issues. I appreciate that.
No, thank you, Sarah. Appreciate your questions.
All right, Leah Marquez Peterson, I hope you have a great weekend. You doing anything special for the 4th of July?
No, just family. So grateful we can all get together again.
We'll see your pictures on Facebook,
absolutely.
I'm sure. All right, Leah Marquez Peterson, we will let Leah go, and we're going to ask Sarah to stick around for a couple of more minutes here on our Friday Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is made possible by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With us on the live line, Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, where she is the opinion page editor and columnist. We had a very good conversation. I learned some things, and I think probably Sarah did too. I can't speak for her. With Leah Marquez Peterson, this stuff gets really complicated, I know, Sarah, but it's so important.
Absolutely. And I do appreciate the chairwoman's ability to put things in language that we non-corporation commission followers can understand.
For sure. The state legislature, I can't recall in recent times taking the session right up until the end of the fiscal year, kind of the beat the clock thing started to kick in on June 30th. And when it was over, the governor was proclaiming through his website that it was a historic budget. But there are a lot of disappointed people, I'm telling you, with this budget, Sarah, because this was a very... there was a lot of money available, surplus money, that many people felt, rather than give a small tax cut to the citizens of Arizona, that could have been going to really clean up some long-standing issues.
Absolutely. It's always and this happens in Arizona, I don't know, it feels like every few years. maybe the interval is longer. We're either in the biggest shortfall known to man, even though it happens regularly, or we're flush as a state. And the legislature never seems to use the flush times to make investments for the services and necessities that were damaged during the lean times. Or they do it like with education, where they just cut the heck out of it 1 or 2 years and then start to get back up to where it was incrementally and say that it's an increase for education when it's really not. So, it's the same sort of song and dance year after year, and it is a disappointment that investing in the people of the state is always... it always falls by the wayside when it comes to the ability to maybe give some wealthy people a tax break.
And the governor rescinded, I had no idea there were this many of them, more than 24 executive orders that were related to the pandemic. And that means it's a wide range of executive orders. I didn't realize there were that many, but one of them has to do with students not having to wear masks in the public education setting.
Yeah, it's just the logic is non-existent, and the political philosophy of somehow Trump's, and I'm not using that word unintentionally, the reality of what things need to happen when there is an emergency or public health concerns, like asking people to wear masks. It's the ideology versus reality has many victims, and COVID has certainly put that into the spotlight more than ever before.
What's coming up in the paper on Sunday, or for Saturday for that matter, over the weekend?
Well, it is July 4th, and so we have a nice piece tomorrow from Fitz about a little bit of his family history and in the context of the American Revolution. And then on Sunday, actually the 4th, we have a piece I really like from Tucson and Paul McCreary, who writes for us on occasion, and he has kind of a July 4th look, sort of what it all means, what patriotism means, and it's a
it's a thought-provoking piece.
People, be very careful this weekend. And I know animal lovers like Sarah and myself, it is tough on our friends, the fireworks and everything, but be very careful with fireworks. Things are really bone dry out there as we wait. I know up at our house, we've had maybe a shower that lasted 5 minutes, if that. We really need some rain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you.
All right, Sarah, always a pleasure. Sarah Garrett Gaston of the Arizona Daily Star. Hope you have a wonderful Independence Day. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, talk to you later. Sarah Garrett Gaston of the Star. Coming up next, it's Weekend Watch. Matt Russell is on his way to California, so Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson will be on the live line giving us a couple of tips for the weekend right after this.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
There we go. Weekend Watch, presented by our friends over in Silver City. And Dan Gibson forgot to set his alarm, I guess. So I think he'll call in. I hope he does in the next moment or so. Weekend Watch is present. Otherwise, I'll be telling you about what's going on that I can think of for this 4th of July weekend, which is basically to try to stay cool. Weekend Watch is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning for that trip to Silver City. It's an easy drive, really. It's about 3 hours east of Tucson, and we always say it's much cooler over in Silver City, like 70 degrees over at midday with a thunder shower. You know, they've been getting, Tom, all the rain over there that we were supposed to get this weekend. I mean, we're supposed to get some rain all week, but it really hasn't materialized, and most of it has been over in the New Mexico area. Lots to do over in Silver City, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more things to do and places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. You know, the number we have for Dan Gibson may be wrong. I haven't had to call him in a while. But Dan, I told him to set the alarm, but he might have gotten involved with another phone call for his business working with Visit Tucson, which, of course, takes priority over the Buckmaster Show because that's his livelihood. Anyway, what folks are doing this weekend. It should be a really great weekend weather-wise. I hope we get some rain. And I think we may have Dan on the line for an abbreviated Weekend Watch session. Hey, Dan, are you there?
I am here.
You forgot to set the alarm.
Well, I was having a little bit of trouble with my phone.
Okay. Give us the quick rundown. What's going on this weekend?
Well, I'll tell you, a million fireworks everywhere, which feels a little bit troubling, but sure, I'm sure it'll be just fine. The rain will help. I may recommend Saturday night if you're trying to get an early jump on it. The FC Tucson match, they have a new coach, the whole new era of FC Tucson soccer at Keno Sports Complex. DJ Herm will be there. It's going to be a heck of a time. If you have not seen FC Tucson play at the Keno North Stadium Complex, it's a fun time. Beers are cheap. It's a solid entertainment all around. And like I mentioned, fireworks.
Of course.
Also, you can't not have them at this point. MSA Annex is having a huge 4th of July event. They also have, bizarrely enough, in a running theme here, DJ Herm will be there, and including my current favorite local band, Los Espleefs, will be there. There will be food trucks, a live circus performance, and fire dancers. It's $15 at the Sunday at 7 p.m., also, if you hear, you can double header it. Have you had Sand Reckoner's wines, Bill?
No, no, I haven't. Are they good?
Yeah, really excellent. Southern Arizona Winery. They're doing a collaborative thing with Moniqua Lane, who owns the downtown Clifton, coming up at the downtown Citizen Hotel. But in the meantime, you can party with them both Saturday and Sunday. Again, strangely enough, at MSA Annex, they will have a pop-up pool lounge from 7 to 10 on Saturday, including Boozy Pops. I don't know what that means. I assume it's
Boozy
liquor and a and some sort of frozen thing. But wine specials and lounge pools. And then on Sunday, they'll be at the downtown Clifton with a barbecue plus fixins and what is described as frosé, which I believe is the wine, the rosé wine, but frozen.
There you go.
Can't lose with that.
Dan, I'm going to have to run. Have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you later.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Theme music by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, and the entire team at Bustos Media. Have a wonderful 4th of July weekend.